Okay, so if you could start by telling me what brought you to the capital in the first place. Was there anything specific that drew you there?
There was. So the I sh first came on Valentine's Day, and that was more of the focused on UW. If you recall, we had that campaign, I Heart UW, and I had heard about that for weeks. Actually, some of my friends were involved in planning that campaign, and so I had planned to attend even before we heard, the Thursday right before, about the bill. This event was planned for at least several weeks before. Really, the planning started early January, so I had been counting on going to that, and I went to pretty much communicate that message, to sign a Valentine, to deliver it to Scott Walker, that funding to the UW shouldn't be cut. So that's what initially drew me there. And if you want to think about it in academic terms, I guess it was more of like a network effect, right? So it was people that I knew that, and I was personally invited, and it started out that way. And then the next day, I came back, and I kept coming back, in fact. And what drew me later, well, what drew me the next day is the public testimonies. I wanted to hear the public testimonies, and I hadn't actually planned on giving one. I'm Canadian, so I thought, it's to give priority to Wisconsinites, and Americans before Canadians. I did eventually testify in the wee hours of the morning. Must have been like 6 a.m. or something like that. But I went for that, and I stayed overnight to show support. So it was pretty much an exercise of solidarity. And then, I mean, as things went, kept going on. First, it was like solidarity. I'm not even TAing this term. I am part of the Teaching Assistants Association, and I do pay dues as an associate member. But so it started out as, an exercise in solidarity, if you want to call it. And then I just became really outraged with the things in the bill, but also just, and this isn't a just, how the governor was pretty much flouting the democratic process, and we see this even now with the, ignoring Judge Sumey's restraining order and all that. I mean, that came a lot later, but the little steps with having meetings without proper notice and all that, like that, I found really outraging, and or outrageous rather, and that provided the momentum for me to keep coming.
Okay. Is there anything, are there any specific memories that you have of the time specifically that you were coming to the Capitol every day? Are there any things that stand out?
Yeah, there are a lot of things actually. So I slept there every night except for one. So I mean, I lived there. I mean, that felt more like home than my home. And actually, the first night that I slept at home after everything was finished, it felt odd being at home because you just come in and out in a couple hours to shower. So I mean, of course, all the political happenings will stay with me. But I think that what's most salient in my memory is like the social relationships that were formed inside the Capitol that I formed. They weren't just formed, people formed them, right? And yeah, those relationships and just that amazing process, like the grassroots initiatives that formed inside everything from, like the food to the lending library to the medic station, all that, which is apart from the politics. It's more of that human side that I think I'll remember most. And then there are, of course, also like specific moments. So I spent a lot of time in the first couple weeks in 300 Northeast, the Situation Room, right, as we called it. And I mean, sometimes up there, you could get caught up in doing the work. So one of the things that I was involved with is media tracking. I was on the media team there, so tracking stories, but also now we've been doing the Defend Wisconsin website and Twitter and Facebook and all that. But because it was located up there, there tended to be some separation from the protests, and So one day I was running back and forth to the TA office to pick up some flyers, and ran back into the Capitol, and on my way up, I mean, I stopped in the rotunda, and everyone was cheering really loudly, and I didn't know what was going on at that point. I mean, they were cheering loudly all the time, but it was targeted towards me. I mean, everyone was looking up, and I just kind of stumbled in and made my way kind of in on the ground floor of the rotunda, and this man, he must have been like 6'3" and 300 pounds, just like towering over me, right? Kind of like motioned for me to come closer and let me stand like right in front of him, and I look up and it's Jesse Jackson.
Oh, wow.
Right? And this is, and I mean, he just came probably like 10 seconds after that man made room for me, so it was just perfect timing. And then this was the first time I saw Jesse Jackson, and it was around noon or maybe 10:30 a.m. and he was addressing the crowd in the rotunda. Later that day he was to give a speech outside, and so after his speech he started singing, and this was before we started singing it all the time, you know, the We Shall Overcome. And so we were singing it, and we had, I had my hands in the air, as did many other people, while singing. I think I was holding a sign as well. And this man, who I said, like, described him physically, he seemed, that's not someone who I would go up to in the street and say hi. He didn't seem, from the outward appearance, as the friendliest fellow, but he grabbed my hand, and the whole crowd was swaying back and forth, and so then I linked up with the person next to me, and that to me was such a moving moment. Actually, and this isn't so much in my personality, like, started to shed tears, because I just felt totally swept up in the moment, and like we were all in it together. Just, there were thousands of people crammed there on the ground floor and the first floor of the rotunda, singing this all in unison, and I just felt so connected to the people around me, and that moment stayed with me for the rest of the protest, and still with me, obviously, and I think it'll stay with me into the future. That really stood out. And then there were so many other, I mean, smaller moments of interaction with, like, seeing people helping one another, just like, and also the ideas that came out, right? So there's the whole child care center and the lending libraries and people loaning or like splitting their granola bars, even things like that, when we started running, or when we thought we started running low on food because we were worried that we couldn't get any more food into the Capitol. We always managed to find a way. But, you know, people sharing those supplies and stories with it. It's not even about the materials, right? It's also stories and just the atmosphere that was created inside the Capitol will definitely stay with me. And it's almost like after it ended, as if I missed that, right? It's like a withdrawal, right? You're caught up in that. That is your life. You're sleeping next to, like, waking up next to people who, I guess, become your friends or at least acquaintances. And it's funny because, you know, when we were kicked out and then we reoccupied the Capitol afterwards, we had I ran into this guy, and he just looked so familiar, and we figured it's because we'd been, like, for 3 nights, like, sleeping right next to one another, right? Like, oh, hey, and I hadn't even caught his name at that point, but we had swapped a lot of stories. That's just funny.
Okay. Could you describe a little bit more what you were involved in doing, like, the kind of activities that you helped with, some more about the things that you did, maybe in 300 Northeast also, like what your role was.
Right, okay. So, at first, oh Lord, let me think back. At first, I did a lot of different things, like data entry, for example. They needed a lot of data entry, so the petitions that were being signed, like just putting in people's addresses. Then I actually, we called it, oh, what did we call it? Something, cutting turf was the term for it. So one night I spent, I think, like 6 hours straight or more looking at, like, maps and then sectioning them off for it was pretty much for canvassing. Mm-hmm. There's this great program where they print out lists, and I would group households in a way that made it hopefully made it easier for the canvassers to go door to door. So those were kind of like, I started out in those supportive roles, and then of course like whatever tasks needed to be done there, helping with like trash duty, which Trevor Young Hyman, a friend of mine, initiated, marshalling sometimes, I mean miscellaneous duties. And then I really quickly actually became involved with the media team, and was doing, as I said a little bit earlier, the the media tracking. So at first a lot of our focus was on keeping track of all the stories about us, and then it just exploded at one point, and so it was difficult to keep track. At one point it was actually manageable, so updating a wiki. And then I got really into when the defendwisconsin.org website took off, you know, helping that and well, contributing a lot to that, working on it. So we had a shift system set up, but we all ended up working on it all the time.
Yeah.
We were so absorbed. And of course with that came the Facebook and the Twitter. So my real focus then became on like getting information out there through these websites and motivating people, mobilizing people to come out through these social media outlets. So a lot of the time as well, I was the contact inside. Since I was sleeping there every night, I would do, and when I couldn't get on the internet, phone out and give updates so that we would get that information out quickly. And we did have, right now we have over 5,000 followers on Twitter, for example, so we could get that information out to that many people, and a lot more visiting our website. So that became my role. And then in that very last week, I mean, we had won the Capitol on Sunday night. I forget which exact Sunday night it was, now the date, but we had won it Sunday night. Monday night, our numbers shrank a lot, or Monday, our numbers shrank a lot because people left and had expected to be able to come back in. We're not being allowed back in. I managed to get back in. And then that week, our numbers were very small, so we were taking on different roles. Like, I was still doing the media stuff, but I, for example, I think it was the Wednesday night, started to organize a volunteer schedule. So I reset up the Lost and Found. We had had one, but everything, or not everything, but a lot of things, when we had to move from the upper floors down to the ground floors, and didn't get set back up again. So I spent some time setting the Lost and Found back up, organizing that, setting the Lending Library back up. And I had written out this chart with a volunteer schedule for food duties and cleanup duties, and put that up. And we had some people sign up, and unfortunately the next day we left the Capitol. That was when we had the judge's order. So that didn't get a chance to get going. But on that last day in the morning, I had organized a cleanup effort. Inside, I mean, the Capitol was kept in really good shape considering how many people were staying there, living there, not just staying there. It was really good. But we wanted to show, get the message out that we really, this was at the time when the news stories were breaking that we were slobs and not taking care of the Capitol, and it was disgusting in there. So we wanted to show as well that, you know, we care about this. This is our house, and we'll take care of it like it is our house. So that morning I organized that, through the, you know, we had these announcements in the morning and in community town halls. That's another way that I was involved, and I'm still involved now with the defendwisconsin.org. We got ourselves a shift system now, which makes things a little easier, or a lot easier, I should say, because you could carry on to a certain extent, normal, whatever normal life is, right? So I still do that. That's in my routine.
Could you maybe talk a little bit more about this kind of community building that went on in the Capitol, and because it seems like something that almost happened overnight, and if you could maybe describe a little more the process of how things like that, like the Lending Library and the Lost and Found and the food donations, kind of got set up, that process.
Sure. I mean, I'll try to, because I'm trying to figure out how that all happened myself. Because this is the whole thing, right? It wasn't organized only by one person or one group. It was, what seems like to me, it was individuals and also groups of individuals taking it upon themselves to just do it. There wasn't really someone to ask, like, can I set up the lending? People just did. So I actually don't know who set up the lending library. It's something that I want to find out. This is something I'm working on with a few other people right now. Project is, like, how did these initiatives spring up? So some things, like, I know, for example, the trash collection had started with Trevor, my friend who I had mentioned earlier, had the idea and really rallied people, and then we had the shifts, and and so upstairs outside of 300 Northeast, we had schedules with who was going to be the food coordinator for, I think at that point we had split it up into morning and afternoon shifts roughly, and trash, and then marshalling. So those things, I mean, there were schedules of, and people would come and sign up. A lot of people were being directed to 300 Northeast who wanted to volunteer but didn't. They were just individuals, for example. And, like, where do I plug in? So a lot of it happened that way. The food, I don't know if it was initially organized or if some establishments just came in. Like, there would people, there would be people just coming up to 300 Northeast asking, what do I do with this food? And we would take it and then make it available, of course, to people. We had a table set up outside of the room where anyone in the Capitol could come. And of course, then there was another table on this, on the second floor or first floor set up to make it easier for people to get food. But things like, this won't answer the how, but there was a whole section, what did they call it? Like, the study room. I studied there one night, I had an exam the next day. Like, the quiet area for studying. I don't know whose idea that was. And then the lending library, I'm not sure who set that up later, but it sprung up out of nowhere. The medic station was really well organized. What else did we have in there? We had so much. There were, I saw later, I thought about this idea, yoga classes going on as well. I mean, so many of these initiatives, and I think a lot of it was just people saw the need and they realized that, like, well, who else is going to do it? I might as well do it. That certainly was the case with Trevor with the trash collection, and I think that was the case with the other efforts as well. It wasn't organized from the top. It was just, like I said, people got the ideas, saw the need, and took it upon themselves to do it rather than waiting for someone else to do it. Like, oh, I just remembered something else. Like, something that I thought was really cool was the, so outside of the information booth, which was one west, there were sign-up sheets, like, for carpooling and for housing, and there was also something on Facebook, which was to connect people from out of town with people with local housing. You know, I think most of the people that were coming to town were sleeping at the Capitol. The idea, of course, was, you know, if you needed a shower, you could go somewhere for that. So there were those initiatives as well. And each time, it was amazing to see how the information station started with the table with, you know, some flyers and stuff, and then really blew up to, like, have this center for, like, it really became the place to go and get information. And on everything, like, there were just so many flyers there, and then hook up through those ways, like through car shares, or, you know, housing or whatever, that was all there as well.
Could you also describe in more detail the process of kind of organizing media? What were your main sources of information for things, especially that you would put on the web or on Twitter? And did you have discussions kind of as a group as to what you were going to put up or anything like that?
What do you mean when you say organizing media?
Like, kind of taking, you know, whatever information was coming in and deciding, like, whether to post it, where it was coming from, and
okay,
sort of thing.
So there were a whole team of people. There was a whole team of people working on media. And we would have meetings where we discussed, you know, future strategy. And, we were learning as we were going.
Yeah.
So So a couple of people on the team had some experience in the past as journalists mm-hmm. or in other capacities related to the media. But a lot of us didn't, you know, we're graduate students who write a lot of essays and know how to make well-formulated arguments, but not necessarily in the way that media people do, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of, I mean, you asked how did we decide which stories went up. We didn't get together and then decide, you know, these are the sources that we're going to pull from. It was mm-hmm. kind of what everyone reads on their own. Like, we know, of course, that we're going to use our local papers, like, you know, Cap Times mm-hmm. and the Badger Herald and the Daily Card and all that. And so we just kind of pulled from those sources, but also mm-hmm. like things like Google has great, like, you could set up those alerts, right, mm-hmm. where you get anything on the Wisconsin protests. So it wasn't like a coordinated strategy, we're going to pull from these sources. Mm-hmm. It was whatever we found to be a really informative story, we would pull. And then, of course, we also started creating our own stories and mm-hmm. sending out press releases. So, of course, we would post those and try to get that information out. And I, just recently, we added a blog to the website. This mm-hmm. was all, like, the ideas that come, like, one person will pitch it, and then... Mm-hmm. or a few people will pitch it, and we decide together on a team how to move forward with the website. But, like, like the actual stories, that's very much up to the individuals mm-hmm. on the team, what they see as relevant. Yeah. And like I said, it was a learning process, and we do as much as we can with the time that we have. Mm-hmm. And we get really positive. We have been receiving really positive mm-hmm. feedback on the website. And for a while, I was doing the bulk of the email checking.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, it seems like a tedious task, but it was really like refreshing, I found, because you would hear from people, like mm-hmm. we'd put things up on the website and not necessarily like we'd see that, you know, this many people mm-hmm. visited the website today, this many people visited in a week, but the people that I would actually write in, you would get a sense of, you know, what we're doing. So mm-hmm. we would get a lot of thank yous, but also really inspiring letters, which we posted several of them, or many of them, in the messages of support section mm-hmm. on the website, which was, you know, telling us how the bill's going to impact their life,
mm-hmm.
How what we're doing here in Wisconsin impacts people elsewhere in the nation. So we would get, you know, these stories, mm-hmm. I mean, the letters, people writing in would mm-hmm. be from, like, elsewhere inside the U.S., but also even overseas. So mm-hmm. I believe we got some from the U.K., and I think Ireland as well. I mean, it's all up there.
Wow.
So it is... It was great to get the sense that there was this like sense of solidarity not only across Wisconsin mm-hmm. but across the nation and also elsewhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. Is there any letter in particular that you remember?
There are two probably that I would say, and one was from this guy in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way he spoke, you know, like, he wrote, "You guys are doing such a dang good job out there," you know, "and we support you," and it just, the language that he was using, it just felt so real, you know, mm-hmm. like, and it was great also to get it from a place like Texas, mm-hmm. which we normally, you know, associate with more conservative
mm-hmm.
Politics and values, and so that one stood out. I mean, just the phrasing of it. The other one that really stood out was a teacher here in Wisconsin sent mm-hmm. a long letter, which was outlining pretty much her day as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in response to the bill, obviously, and how, you know, teachers do a lot. They really mm-hmm. do, you know, through educating our children, they're responsible for the future of mm-hmm. the state in that way. So she went through, and it was a very long piece, her entire day as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and showing the various ways in which she helps her students, mm-hmm. and her care for the students mm-hmm. came out through that letter as well. And that's really one that I think a lot of people connected to. And I think that, and so we tweeted that one out, and mm-hmm. it just kept getting retweeted, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I think people were really connecting to that story, because it's one of those cases where you put a face on what's happening,
mm-hmm.
you know? And a lot of us, of course, we know people. We know teachers, students, other public employees who this bill will affect. This was just a way to articulate in a very real sense, like,
mm-hmm.
who one of those people are,
mm-hmm.
For people maybe, like, outside of the state as well, who don't know. Well, of course, they know their own teachers in their states, but, like,
right.
it put a face on
mm-hmm.
the bill.
Okay. So to kind of change gears a little bit, I'm curious if you had any kind of expectations for what this might be like when you started getting involved at the Capitol. Whether, I don't know, if you expected it to grow so big or last so long, or if you were surprised in any way, kind of what you thought would become of this,
mm-hmm.
and how maybe that changed over time.
Yeah, so I was definitely surprised. I don't know how many expectations I had in the beginning. It was more like that Tuesday, February 15th, when we came to give the testimony, the idea was, and I remember, you know, we were talking about this at the TA meeting or in some TA emails, like, guys, bring your sleeping bags. We may have to testify all night.
Mm-hmm.
I had the feeling that it would end, like, the Capitol part would end that night. It would be
mm-hmm.
a fun sleepover. I mean, fun with a purpose. It's not fun just for the sake of having a sleepover.
Mm-hmm.
It was towards a purpose, which was to express, like, our discontent with the bill,
mm-hmm.
And to persuade lawmakers to not, you know, to vote down the bill. But I guess I didn't think far ahead about how long. I definitely didn't expect it to turn
mm-hmm.
into an occupation of the
mm-hmm.
Capitol. I don't think anyone did, or very few people at least
right.
did. No one that I know certainly thought that it would turn into what it turned into. So it was one of those, I guess I just had a very short-term vision for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned into what it turned into, which was weeks and weeks long occupation and protests that turned out tens of thousands. And on some
mm-hmm.
occasions, even though the official numbers didn't show it, I could assure you, and some publications will say, you know, over 100,000 people. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So I also didn't expect, you know, to take more of, I guess, a negative approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
The governor to act or to respond in the way that he did,
mm-hmm.
pretty much like ignoring public opinion while claiming to be listening to the public,
right.
and yet ignoring the voices of those tens of thousands of people that would show up, and those thousands of people that would be at the Capitol every day, like not just on the Saturday rallies. So that was something as well that I guess everything that unfolded surprised me. It's like you thought that it couldn't get any worse, and then it does. Like, you get, you know, they split the bill, and
mm-hmm.
then they're going to vote on the non-financial part of it. And meanwhile, that was when things started returning to normal, and I'm involved in this other project on campus that's opening a cafe, and I was there working that day, and you get a tweet, and it's like, show up at the Capitol, you know, they're going to vote on this tonight.
Mm-hmm.
That's another, like, really surprising thing.
Mm-hmm.
Totally didn't expect that to happen, right? And then even when we showed up that night, I didn't expect to be sleeping there that night. I mean, like, all of this has been really organic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some things, of course, you could plan ahead to Saturday rallies, but a lot of what happened wasn't foreseen,
mm-hmm.
or couldn't be foreseen. And of course, a lot of the things that we did were like reactions to the governor's actions.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, another surprising thing, I think of so many examples, right?
Mm-hmm.
When Judge Sumi put the restraining order on the bill, or on the law, you know, after it was passed, and then they published it anyways. Like,
mm-hmm.
this is all, what I'm saying, kept fueling me to come back, is like this
mm-hmm.
total disregard for the democratic process
mm-hmm.
and the judicial system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm still having a hard time grasping that this has gone, like, that they feel that they and when I say they, I mean the governor and many of the Republicans, not all of them. Schultz is one of the exceptions, right? Like, feel that they could act this way and not be accountable to the public who elected them, right? So I keep being surprised day to day with the Supreme Court elections. I mean, like, it just keeps going on. And but to end maybe on a positive note, this comment is, I was surprised, as I was saying, so earlier I was talking about all those initiatives that sprung up. I guess I was really surprised at the way that people come together and form a community so quickly as well, and such a strong one. You know, I just moved here in the fall, in August, really, to begin graduate school here. I'm in the sociology program. And so, I mean, I'm still, by the time this started February, still getting adjusted. I feel pretty comfortable, but, you know, it's not as if I've been here for years. And it wasn't just getting adjusted to the state, it's getting adjusted to the country as well. Right. It's a whole other country. So, I mean, before then, I felt connected to Madison, but not connected in the same way that I feel now. You know, that sense of, like, real solidarity, like, I'm in this with you all, right? There's isn't so much that line between, like, me and them, like Wisconsinites, right? Like, I identify as one. Probably say I'm Wisconsin now, too, you know? So, on the positive note, like, all those things that happened, the grassroots initiatives, the self-organizing, the community that came out of, like, that formed inside the Capitol, but also, like, the community across the state, like, this sort of connecting, like, to people that you don't even know, like, like, to see face-to-face, like, to be able to give a pat on the back, like, at Saturday rallies, or, like, share a smile, or, like, talk about it. Like, it's transformed the city, you know? You can't go anywhere. So, for those couple of weeks, when I would run to campus when I had to get to class or something, like, you're away from the Capitol, but you're not away from the Capitol, because everyone's talking about it. So, I remember getting on the bus, and I never took a seat the whole time. I was talking to the bus driver on the way to campus one day, like, about how this is going to affect public transit and his job as well. And so, I mean, it created this whole, like, outside of just the Capitol Square. I think that, like, Madison really came together. And I mean, I say Madison because I was here in Madison. I'm sure this was happening across the state. That was something that I guess was surprising, and also something, like, you just don't spend time thinking about. A lot of the focus is on the politics, right, and defeating the bill. But it's just all of those processes are really amazing, and I think that's transformed the city, and that vibe is still in the air now, and that's what keeps people coming out now, more focused on Saturdays, but it's still here very much among us.
Okay, to kind of tag along on that, you had said earlier that it's been kind of weird getting back into your quote-unquote normal life, and you kind of miss being in the Capitol. So I'm just curious, do you think that in addition to this kind of transforming the city, that you have also changed as a person in some way by being affected by this?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I guess it's almost still too soon to say, because it's hard to really sit back and reflect on how it's impacted me. I mean, there are obvious ways that it has, I think, but I think, like, longer term, that'll come out as time goes on. I mean, the transition, like I said earlier, and like you asked right now in your question, was it difficult, you know, going from being around people 24 hours a day, pretty much. You know, I would go home, I would pop into my house like an hour, for an hour and a half to shower, and then run back up. Like, and this, of course, I'm nothing about the politics, just like the social aspect of it. Like, that was, it's definitely like withdrawal. It felt very odd, like sitting at home. I live alone in my apartment, like sitting at home in silence. That first night was just, like, I experienced that in a very odd way. And you definitely miss that community. Like, that's That's one thing. Like, I guess I realized how, me, the sociologist, finally realized how social of a being I am. I mean, of course we're social beings, but that, I mean, it was nice, don't get me wrong, to, like, not sleep on a cold marble floor. Right. But, yeah, that definitely, I guess that was one self-realization that I had. And like I had mentioned just a few minutes ago about, like, feeling more connected to the state. Mm-hmm. And I think even the country, like, that's something that mm-hmm. I really find. Like, before, for example, like, there was a lot of the singing of the national anthem mm-hmm. in the rotunda. And as a Canadian, I mean, that part, sometimes I would feel excluded, especially mm-hmm. at the beginning of the protest when that would happen. In the sense of, you know, like, can't really take part. Or, right. I mean, of course I could sing it, but I felt still a dividing line there. But as the time went on and, like, these protests grew, like, mm-hmm. I felt more comfortable in that situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like, one of these things where I'm coming to identify more, like I'm not just here for school. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, this is, I came here to enroll in the graduate program and, you know, to get a degree from this institution, and I likely won't stay in the state because of the way that hiring practices work in academia, but I feel connected. It's not a place that I'm passing through anymore, at least I don't see it that way. It's like a place where I will live, and I will, like, carry the memories from Wisconsin mm-hmm. on with me, and I feel more like a Wisconsinite. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely, I would say, like, the key transformation for me
mm-hmm.
With the protests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think there's any kind of larger message that you'll remember about this when you look back on it from some distance? Like, what seems kind of most important to you just about this whole thing at the moment?
Again, the story isn't finished, right? Mm-hmm. So it's still ongoing. And in a sense, stories are never finished, but it's still very much developing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but based on what's gone on so far, I mean, I think I, again, although they're not completely separable, but I guess in an analytic way they are, like, the political from the social. So, of mm-hmm. course, like, the content of all this, like, that, I'll remember, like, the protests and, like, the content of the, well, I won't remember all the content of the bill, but, you know what I mean? Like, the protesting against this bill, like, the impact that the bill would have on mm-hmm. society, on members of society. There's that whole aspect, which, I mean, that's been documented enough, but what I'll take away, like, is more of, like, I was saying earlier, the coming together of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of times people talk about these ages being, like, an age of apathetic young people, for mm-hmm. example. We don't really care about politics, aren't involved. And I think this really showed that we do have a stake.
Mm-hmm.
We do care about the state, about the bill, about what goes on. That'll come together. Like, that'll stay with me, the coming together of people in a just cause.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I'll carry on with me, apart from, like, the content of the bill and how outrageous it is mm-hmm. and how it's totally setting back Wisconsin, you know, half a century, more even. So it's the human aspect that'll mm-hmm. stay with me. Like I've been saying, the coming together, the really, like, fighting for, there's a lot of talk in I mean, of course, Canada's democratic too, but there's a lot of talk in America, like, in common rhetoric about democracy
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the founding fathers and all that. And this is just, it seems to me, like, one expression of that, like, really, like, that fundamental ideal
mm-hmm.
in American life and in a lot of the Western world, but I would say especially American life. Just beautiful to see citizens coming together
mm-hmm.
to fight for the, and in many ways this is like a fight for democracy because
mm-hmm.
of what I was saying earlier with Governor Walker totally, like, disregarding the judicial process and his constituents. It's just great to see that it's still working. Like, people will come out, our voice, we won't be silenced, you know, and people are still coming. I still go around the Capitol, and there are people day in and day out, not in the same numbers as before, but, like, going around and protesting, and we won't forget about it, and it's just this continued fight and struggle. I think that's something, again, that I'll carry with me for a long time.
Okay. And this, I mean, this might be kind of end up with the same answer, but what would you want to be remembered about this by other people, maybe people who weren't necessarily involved, who didn't experience this firsthand? What do you think is important about this to be communicated for generations?
So maybe to not repeat myself, and not focusing on the social side, which I think is a really important aspect. I think at this moment, and again, we don't know what the outcome will be. Like, well, the bill has been passed, but I mean, will it be reversed next year? If we will we manage to recall Walker and have elections and then reverse the contents of the bill? If we do succeed in that, I think that what happened shouldn't be forgotten, that, you know, these rights that we almost have come, I know I have come to take for granted because they're there, and of course they'll be there. It's important to remember, and I hope that people do remember, that democracy is something that you work at. It's not something to be taken for granted, it's something that'll just be there. It's definitely something that, you know, can be taken away from you almost at any moment. I mean, and it certainly did. It blindsided me, and I think a lot of other people didn't foresee these changes when Governor Walker was elected, or certainly not when he was running his campaign. And so it's something to remember that, right, you have to keep working at this and to not take it for granted. And I hope that that message stays with people. And there's also, like, for the history of labor, like, remembering this moment and the progressive history of Wisconsin and what this means for that progressive history. And like I said, even if we are able to, like, repeal the bill in a year's time, in 2 years' time, remembering this moment and this attack, and that, like, allowing that then to fuel hopefully people to, like, come out and to vote. Like, that's something we saw with the Supreme Court elections just a couple weeks ago, right? Is the continued necessity to come out and vote at the polls, but also, like, apart from when there are elections, to be involved in the democratic process. Like, go and, you know, give public testimonies on bills, like, make those voices heard for lawmakers to listen to you. And if they don't listen to you, you know, then get them out, right? Like, and make sure that someone that is accountable to the public or feels accountable to the public is in office.
Okay, well, that's all the questions I have, so.
Great.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.